All right, everyone. Welcome back to the Crypto 101 Rundown presented by Gemini, your bridge to the future of money. And man, we're coming in hot here. December is coming to a close. It's almost the end of the year, and there's still a lot to talk about. But just real quick before we begin, this year has been a wild one. And we've seen a lot of comments and questions and concerns and excitement. And we've seen all the different emotions over the course of this year. But as we're beginning to come to a close, we're looking back and saying, number one, this year's flown by. But number two, it's been a roller coaster. I mean, we started the year off with Bitcoin hitting new all-time highs, most cryptos hitting new all-time highs. And then we had the tariff crash, the first black swan event. Then we came in and we rallied off those. Bitcoin hit new all-time highs afterwards. And then we saw the largest liquidation event ever in crypto history. And then we came back down, and that's what we're kind of in now. But we've been at this unique point where we are at the highs, then we saw a black swan, then we went back to the highs, then another black swan, and we're going back and forth and back and forth. However, despite all of that, what we've seen is so much growth. I'm talking about growth from the technicals, the fundamentals, the on-chain data, adoption, you name it. There has been so much happening in the background. And that's one of our favorite reasons about why we do the rundown in the first place, is that we love to just go get all of the data from the technicals on the charts to the fundamentals in the news, gather it all and bring it to you all completely for free in under an hour's time. So if you do like it, we have a lot to talk about in today's episode, but if you do like it, hit the like and subscribe button. If you are on one of these other platforms like Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Audible or iHeart or anywhere else, and you want to see the visuals that we're going to have on screen here, because we're going to have lots of charts and articles and tweets and other things, you need to head over to our YouTube channel. That's where we have all the graphics and visuals. It's the Crypto 101 podcast on YouTube. And without further ado, I mean, TiVo, what a year, man. I know this isn't our last rundown of the year, but we're getting to it.
Yeah, an exciting time of the year as we wrap things up. And, you know, again, we've been kind of navigating the nasty price action recently, dumped down to 80, but, you know, steady here at 90. We're going to bring up the charts in a second. And we've got, I mean, just again, the fundamentals of the news flow just keeps being positive. So again, we try to shoot it as straight as we can here, but we got a lot of fun things to talk about, revealing kind of who is buying this dip at the 80K that kind of propped us maybe back up to 90. With some positive news flow. So we got stuff to share you that would, there's definitely one that's pretty surprising. I'm excited to talk about, but we'll hand it off to you and we'll start with the charts and then dive into the rest of it.
Yeah. I mean, if we take a look at the charts here, this is that back and forth. I mean, let's just recap it. This is that back and forth that we've been talking about over the course of this year. You know, end of last year, we shot up, started this year at the highs. We came back in, came back to the highs. Now we're coming back in, and I think there's some solid evidence here, TiVo, that we're seeing some break in short-term structure, especially from the bears. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, if you look at what we've done off the highs, Bitcoin kind of hit the all-time high, then came in. And what we've seen since then is just lower highs and lower lows on Bitcoin pushing down. Until the last couple of weeks, really around the time December started, we started to see a shift in the short-term structure. So there's two things I want you to consider. One, kind of the consistent lower highs and lower lows that Bitcoin had been making. And number two, the 20-day moving average. Let's start with point number one first. Well, we've seen these lower highs and lower lows happening with Bitcoin kind of continually depreciating over the last 2 to 3 months. But the shift here that's happening is that instead of kind of seeing lower highs and lower lows, we're seeing something a little bit different now, where Bitcoin is kind of, you know, rejected here, fell down, and then we rose back up to the same resistance level. So not a lower point, the same resistance. And we came to a higher low, and we came back up to the same resistance. And then it looks like we're trying to put in another higher low after that. So I'm looking at this and saying, okay, well, the bulls are at least seeing a climbing level of support. The bears are not really able to advance. They're only holding the line at around 93K. And this is a little bit of different price action from what we've seen over the last two and a half months or so. The second one is going to be that 20-day moving average.
All right, Crypt Nation fam, let's pause for 1 second and talk about an important issue going on right now, and that's SIM swap attacks. SIM swap attacks are becoming a serious threat, especially in crypto. If someone gets control of your phone number, they can access your bank accounts, your exchanges, emails, and even your private messages.
That's why the Crypto 101 podcast is partnered with Afani. It's America's most secure mobile service, offering a guaranteed protection against SIM swaps with added privacy. Since launching, not one single Afani user has ever been SIM swapped. And for some reason, if it ever does happen, you're backed by up to $5 million in insurance against financial losses. This is literally why we chose to partner with them. It is our favorite thing about Afani is the insurance policy of up to $5 million if it does happen to you. Afani runs on either AT&T or the Verizon network, and you get to choose which one. There are no contracts, and it is super easy and seamless to sign up. You also get a 60-day money-back guarantee, so there's zero risk in trying it out. Right now, for our listeners, you get $99 off when you sign up at Afani.com/crypto101. That's Afani.com/crypto101, or check the show notes below for a link. These days, your phone number is probably more valuable than your social security number, so make sure it's protected with Afani.
Cold mornings, holiday plans. This is when I need my wardrobe to just work. That's why I'm all about Quince. They make it easy to look sharp, feel good, and find gifts that last. From Mongolian cashmere sweaters to Italian wool coats, Quince pieces are crafted from premium materials and built to hold up without the luxury markup. Quince makes the essentials every guy needs, Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, Italian wool coats that look and feel designer, and denim and chinos that fit just right. Their outerwear lineup is no joke, guys. You have to go check it out. Each piece is made from premium materials by trusted factories that meet rigorous standards for craftsmanship and ethical production. By cutting out the middleman and traditional markup, Quince delivers the same quality as luxury brands at a fraction of the price. It's everything you actually want to wear, built to hold up season after season. Guys, the down jacket I picked up from Quince is getting me through the cold winter when I go up north to visit my family. I also got an awesome vest that I like to wear down here in Florida when the weather gets colder as well. It looks super expensive and designer, but again, it's a fraction of the price. Guys, get your wardrobe sorted and your gift list handled this holiday season with Quince. Don't wait. Go to Quince.com/crypto101 for free shipping on your orders and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's Quince, Quince.com/crypto101. You'll get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/crypto101. You'll be glad you did. Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body actually is? I found that out firsthand when I took the True Age test from True Diagnostic, and it completely changed the way I think about my health. With just a simple at-home test, you can find out your true biological age with no doctor visits or labs. Just a quick, painless finger prick. You mail in your sample using a prepaid package, and in 2 to 3 weeks, you will get a detailed online report about your aging and health. The test breaks down how fast 11 key systems like your heart, brain, liver, and lungs are aging, plus 75 longevity biomarkers covering things like metabolic health, immune response, and disease risk. Your biological age, how old your cells and organs really are, is actually the number one predictor of your risk for serious diseases like heart disease, cancer, and dementia. That's why knowing it can be life-changing, and that's exactly what True Age helps you do. They made it so easy to get my blood drawn, show me my results, and give me the data so I could make the perfect action plan for me to better my health. If you're serious about longevity or just curious about what your body's real age is, head to TrueDiagnostic.com and use my code Crypto101 for 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's TrueDiagnostic.com, code Crypto101 for 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
The only time that we have seen the 20-day moving average fail was on one singular fakeout. Other than that, you see a quick rejection ever since the all-time high. You see a rejection of that blue line or that 20-day moving average right here, and then right here, and then right here, and then again here, in here. And now we're starting to get above it, and we're actually closing for the most part above it. Again, the only exception for that rule was right around the end of October, where we broke up, spent maybe 2 days above it, and immediately it was followed by a huge rejection where Bitcoin came immediately back below it, lower high into more downside kind of continuation. So we had that one little fake out over in here. And again, this is looking different from that. We got above that 20-day moving average. However, we rejected, but we kind of came back to it. And now what we're seeing is that the bulk of these buyers in here are actually around or above the 20-day moving average. And we're not just kind of falling beneath it, immediately rejecting it and seeing more downside continuation. We're kind of seeing the opposite, where we're breaking above it and finding support around it. And again, it's a little bit of a shift. So we're not only seeing kind of higher lows, consistent highs above the 20-day moving average. I'd say all those things are feeding into this idea that short-term bearish structure is showing some cracks. Now, does this mean that the bear market is over, that the whole bearish trend is over, that we've found the bottom, we reversed all that? Not necessarily, right? I say that we're finding cracks in the bearish trend and we're finding cracks in the bearish structure. And I use those words very specifically because cracks are not necessarily saying everything's going to come crumbling down, but it looks good. It does. Especially when you compile this with a lot of the other data that we've looked at so far in recent weeks. I mean, on these rundowns with me and you and Brian, some of the other analysts on the team, three things stand out to me in terms of much more large structure. It's that one-day RSI. I mean, it's at the lowest level that we've seen since August of 2023. That is the first pullback after the market kind of rallied off those macro lows after the last bear market cycle. So the one-day RSI at the lowest level that we've seen since August of 2023. The one-week RSI at the lowest levels that we've seen since around December of 2022, which was the absolute bottom period of the market after the Terra Luna and FTX crash. Then you have the fear and greed index at the lowest levels. I mean, at a 10 or lower, it's just crazy. And we've only ever seen a 10 or lower at historic bottoming events. Things like the tariff crash and the bottom of that, the bottom of COVID, the bottom of 2022, the bottom of like the 2018 market cycle. A lot of those significant and key events are really some of the only times that we've seen the fear and greed index get that low. And so when you look and you start piecing all this data together, I think you're starting to see some cracks in the bearish argument that has been so strong for a while. Now, one of the things that we've also talked about, TiVo, and then we're going to switch it up, is that if you look at Bitcoin, like Bitcoin's been in this quote-unquote bear market for a couple of months, you kind of seen lower highs and lower lows really since October for Bitcoin, but it was pretty stagnant since June and July, mostly like July. Altcoins have been a different story. Altcoins have been downtrending for almost 6 months now. You go and you look at, I think, the average altcoin, like let's just use one that, I don't know, like a random one, right? Let's just look at Chainlink. This thing kind of found its top around August. And ever since then, it's been downtrending for all of August, September, October, November, now December. And you go and you look at a lot of these other altcoins. Aerodrome, one that we like a lot, same story. You could go and look at Sui, same story, except this one actually topped out in July. And so altcoins have been trending down for months. And there's a good chance we're seeing some signs of exhaustion from the bears. Not entirely right, because I think the two main things that we need to see is a higher swing low on this relative strength index on that one-day time frame, which we haven't quite seen yet. And we need to see Bitcoin trading more aggressively over that 20 and 50-day moving average and have that golden cross happen where the 20-day crosses upwards over the 50-day moving average. And if we can start seeing all of those things with higher highs, that would really kind of solidify the idea of a bottom. But we are seeing cracks in a lot of the bearish structure that we're seeing. And again, it's making me want to get a little bit more excited down here. We're not like fully convinced yet, but it's enough for me to say like, hey, like I'm okay kind of DCAing on Bitcoin, especially a lot of these altcoins that have already been getting suppressed and depreciating for months and months now. You know, now that we're starting to see some cracks, am I okay taking some stabs at this stuff? I am. I'm still being careful, but I like what I'm seeing. And obviously, as we're going to talk about with a lot of the fundamentals, we're seeing good stuff happen over there as well.
Yeah, there was I'm going to play a clip later in the show. I think it might be a quote that's in that clip specifically. It was like, everybody likes buying crypto at the all time highs. They don't like they don't like buying the dips. So certainly, we're certainly in a dip and you're trying to parse through all the information, trying to figure out who's DCAing in, and then that's kind of going to transition us into our next topic. So obviously there's the classic, Michael Saylor is buying some Bitcoin this week. A lot of FUD around MSTR. I think, we're going to have a second show later in the week on Friday, and there was a clip I saw, we couldn't fit it into the rundown today, but I'll bring it on Friday, kind of breaking down the MSTR FUD, but they bought another, 10,624 Bitcoin. Not surprising. And then I found a clip here. So our first clip of the day is going to be Larry Fink, a friend of the program, of course, talking about kind of he's seeing sovereign wealth funds buying the dip. He didn't reveal a name, but again, through the IBIT, the BlackRock Bitcoin ETF, a lot of people use it from, you know, retail all the way to sovereign wealth fund. But I think, and I have a, we'll keep moving on after listening to the clip, but we think we know who it is, but let's listen to Larry Fink.
From we're seeing more and more legitimate long-only investors investing in it. There was an article about a foundation, an endowment just bought a lot of IBIT. But I can tell you there are a number of sovereign funds that are standing by. They're adding incrementally at 120, at 100. I know they bought more in the 80s. Right. That's fine. And they're establishing a longer position. And you own it over years. This is not a trade. You own it for a purpose. From we're seeing.
So then, you know, which sovereign wealth fund is it? Well, we all know that the UAE has been buying some Bitcoin, and then they came out with kind of a quote. They're saying that Bitcoin's a key pillar of the future of finance, not just a crypto asset. So again, you don't have access to necessarily their wallets to see if or what they're buying or how much of it. But again, just the chatter around it kind of leads me to believe, if I was a betting man, that maybe the UAE, you know, nibbled at that $80,000 level.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing is, like, they're not the only ones interested in buying down here. We've seen a lot of these little pockets of, like, hey, there's big buyers out there, and we've seen some whale orders. And one of the cool things that you actually highlighted to me this week was that it's not just Bitcoin. Like, we're seeing this happen on a lot of other places. You know, significantly, we're going to talk about Ethereum here, spoiler alert, in just a second. But looking at some of those Solana and XRP ETF inflows has been just astonishing. Like weeks and weeks of consistent inflows without a day of outflows. It's crazy. And a lot of this is happening. It's happening in a downtrend. I mean, these things are depreciating by 10, 20, 30%. And they're continuing to have weeks on weeks at a time of net inflows, which is super impressive.
Yeah, again, it's kind of, you know, retail or people get scared. Weak hands get shaken out when price goes down. And yeah, there's people with conviction. And again, with the ETF flows, you don't necessarily know who's buying it unless it's Tom Lee. Because, of course, Tom Lee just continues to buy the dip. And that we're referring to BitMine. The DAT buys another 138,452 ETH worth. 435 million. So again, pretty impressive dip buying continuing from Tom Lee. But I think we know it's, again, the Michael Saylors and the Tom Lees. It's basically a weekly, you know, set it and forget it buy. I think when the price goes down, especially for Tom Lee, because they're a little bit newer on the strategy, they've definitely upped their increments as much as they can when the price has gone down. But I found this clip that I thought was interesting. I'm kind of just I kind of labeled as just traditional TradFi's eyeing the dip as well. I thought this was really well said. We kind of talked about this when price is going up and it's flying higher at a ridiculous rate. Bitcoin and crypto is the A block, and then when it's going down and it's flying lower at a ridiculous rate, Bitcoin and crypto is also the A block. You know, saying, oh, the trade's over, it's devastating, everybody's losing. I feel like that kind of calmed down the last week, and I caught this. This was like, I don't know, this may be like a C block, or it's just talking about strategy. They're trying to keep bashing strategy, and then, you know, this panelist kind of spun it into, you know, getting away from talking about strategy and even Bitcoin and went into Ethereum. So let's take a look. I thought it was an interesting kind of buy the dip conversation.
I think MicroStrategy has a complicated balance sheet, and so I've never owned it. I think BMNR from a Ethereum treasury, they have a clean balance sheet. Obviously, they're issuing shares, but they're not doing preferreds or converts. And so I think that this is an opportunity. I bought more Ethereum last week. I just think, especially with Ethereum, which is down quite a bit off its highs, this is when you add to these positions, right? You're supposed to buy low, sell high. But most people feel comfortable buying crypto at the all-time highs, not when there's actually an event occurring. Whether MSCI fleshes out, I have no idea.
You're telling people to buy strategy?
No, Ethereum. I was like, I don't understand. MicroStrategy's balance sheet is way too complicated for me to parse through. I've decided to play it with Ethereum and IBIT.
Okay, I didn't go to you on it because I didn't know what else there is to say on it.
No, I mean, what else is there to say? Let me give you something else. There's 15 buys on the stock There's three holds. There's one sell. The 12-month price target for this stock that trades 182 right now is $473. That's ridiculous.
So two things there quickly on the back end there. Just the street's getting really, really negative on MSTR. It started trading under its NAV value. We covered that. I'm kind of with her. Like, I'm not smart enough to go through the balance sheet and kind of figure this out. Matt Hogan is. Matt Hogan had a clip. I'm going to pull that for Friday to kind of talk about MSTR a little more. But let's table that for now. Just the street's getting a little bearish on MSTR. But again, I think if the price action flips and we wake up, you know, next week or 2 weeks and Bitcoin's back to 110, I think MSTR rockets right up with that, right? Because of the way it's built with its leverage and people are shorting it and then they're longing it. It's turned into more of a financial instrument than a pure Bitcoin play. And that's just my opinion. But I thought it was really interesting, the Ethereum dip conversation, because again, everybody knows Tom Lee, of course, friend of the show, but it's like, you know, she's a great investor. I've seen her on TV, but you know, she doesn't get headlines like Tom Lee does when she says she's buying the dip or buying Bitmine or buying Ethereum. And I think that's an interesting kind of just gauge for TradFi in general. It's been, okay, obviously Larry Fink's been talking about tokenization. Solana, Ethereum have kind of taken the forefront of the altcoins, and like, where are we going to build the financial system on top of? Jamie Crypto Diamond, of course, is talking about it as well. And so I think when you start hearing some other, you know, talking heads or traders that don't have the notoriety that a Tom Lee or a, you know, Michael Saylor does when they talk about buying the dip with these DATs, it's an interesting kind of pulse of the industry.
Yeah, no, you're right. And if you look at the way that Ethereum's been performing, Ethereum has actually been outperforming Bitcoin off of the lows. ETH's up about 21% from its lows on November 21st, whereas Bitcoin's up about 14% off of its lows from November 21st. So Ethereum, like, substantially outperforming Bitcoin off of the lows. And I think when we're talking about these treasury plays, right, these DATs, those are almost always going to be a leveraged play on whatever asset they are accumulating, right? So in a bull market, they tend to move up more than the underlying assets. That's kind of the whole point, is that they are a leveraged play to run these things. So in a bull market, they might see more upside, but in a bear market, they might see more downside. And that's just the way that this goes. So when you look at Bitmine and you look at MicroStrategy and you look at a lot of these companies, they tend to see more volatility in whatever direction the market's heading. Obviously, for the last couple of months, it's been bearish. And since then, they have been like just depreciating at a higher rate. I think that if the markets do rally and we do go back to all-time highs, they probably have a glorious rebound. And you probably see that reflected. I would kind of agree with them in the sense that MicroStrategy's entire, I mean, no pun intended, their entire strategy has become more complicated over, I would say, the last year or so, right? They started out from just being kind of a Bitcoin play. Now they're doing all these different kinds of like stock issuance. They have all these different products, like high yield products. Now they're saying, hey, we might need to, there's that whole like rumor of, oh, they might need to sell Bitcoin to actually support these new yield products and high income stuff. And, you know, I think that there is a little bit of confusion as to like what goes on. And I don't even think confusion is the right word. It's just they have gotten more complex in nature, which is probably just the natural evolution of any company, is that you get more products, you get more complex, you add things, like that's just the way it goes. Whereas people do kind of look at Bitmine as like a simpler. It's like, hey, they don't have all the bells and whistles, but they kind of do what the treasury is expected to do. And it's ran by someone that is, I would say, equally as competent as Michael Saylor. Super competent individual. Like, he knows what he's doing. He clearly does, if you kind of look at the track record so far. And I'd say kind of Tom Lee's in the same boat. So, you know, listen, good things to say about both of them. They're both trying to push the crypto space. They both believe in crypto long term. And the people that are upset that they've been seeing some extra downside, that's just because they always move at a higher volatility rate, depending on where the market's headed, both up and down. So.
Yeah, and again, when we broaden the conversation to Bitcoin and Ethereum and this tokenization effort, you know, Jamie Crypto Diamond is talking about the tokenization. Larry Fink was a leader talking about tokenization and how it could be built on Ethereum. And I always asked myself, Brendan, I was like, well, if Larry Fink's pounding the streets talking about tokenization and IBIT, is the most, and I think I've even said this on the program before, is like, if iBit is the top, you know, revenue maker for BlackRock, and they believe in Bitcoin as kind of a futuristic gold and offering it to their clients, and it's making them a lot of money. And then Larry Fink's talking about tokenization and bringing the, you know, the financial services industry on chain, and it could be done on Ethereum. I'm sitting here, Brandon. I'm like, why is there not an Ethereum ETF? It makes no sense. I'm like, it has to, like, for them to believe in these words that they're saying on all these stages and all these speeches, there has to be an Ethereum ETF, right?
Yeah, I mean, you would think so, right? And oh, there it is. BlackRock's iShares just filed for a staked Ethereum ETF. And I think that's the key, right? That's the big thing that everyone's looking for, is because we have a lot of Ethereum ETFs already out there, but it's like, are they going to be staking ETFs? Because Solana already has staking ETFs, right? So everyone's like, well, if Solana has one, why can't Ethereum? And I think the SEC looked at it and they're like, oh yeah, you're probably right. And so this is kind of the next stage, is that we probably see more Ethereum staking ETFs from all the big players, all of them.
Yeah, and just, but I think it's really important that BlackRock has one, because again, I know obviously Grayscale led the way with the lawsuit, but ever since then, it's been the BlackRock, the iShares, you know, the trusted financial services of BlackRock have led, you know, the inflows and the sovereign wealth funds, like we just talked about earlier. They trust BlackRock, the liquidity of BlackRock allowing iBit, you know, options or crazy volume as well, along with MSTR. And I just thought, especially the way Larry Fink was talking about tokenization and kind of really leaning towards Ethereum, I was like, man, there has to be something in the pipeline for an Ethereum ETF. And so, bam, here we go. It's filed. And the fact that it's filed as a staking ETF, again, all the things that we've covered on the show before of kind of the new age of a dividend could be staking. I think it will take, you know, time, just as all these new ETFs take time for a lot of the large players to dive in. But could Ethereum end up being kind of an aristocrat dividend play for some of the funds that need to buy stocks that have dividends? Will Ethereum maybe one day go into there and just open up its doors to just a flood of capital? The possibility is now there if this stake ETF gets approved. Obviously, the SEC is on board with it. I think this is big. I really do. Again, we've learned from the Bitcoin ETFs that it just takes time. But I think this is really bullish for Ethereum.
Yeah, and quick clarification. So BlackRock has had an Ethereum spot ETF for about a year and a half almost. I think it came out last July in 2024. But again, the big push is the staking side, because that's what hasn't existed. I believe the ticker is ETHA for anybody who is interested. But the whole idea here is that, like, again, the staking side, that's the emphasis. That's what we're seeing as like a new kind of factor get thrown into this. Because when Solana's staking ETFs started to come out, it was like, hey, like, you're right, Tivo. Like, this should start being a thing, especially with all the talk of tokenization and how bullish they are on ETH. Like, it's only a matter of time until we get these staking ETFs for ETH as well. And that's where it seems like the floodgates have kind of opened.
Yeah. And I just think once it has that staked feature, I just think that's super important, because I don't think you get the full fledged investment of 100%. Ethereum without the staking. And so, yeah, they've had the ETH. And I know Brian was somebody on the show that was really tracking the Ethereum ETFs. He really liked watching the inflows. And there's been a ton of it, as we covered on the show. But I wonder if they'll be able, if like ETHA will just kind of fold into the new one. They probably have some type of way that they'll do that, I'm sure.
I hope so.
Or at least offer it, like at least have an offering. But I just think that the full-fledged journey of investing in Ethereum without the staking, I think that's so important, because again, in this TradFi world, there's certain funds that have certain rules, right? And some of these funds that I think now may have access in the future to Ethereum is the need for a dividend. And I think that's something that'll be interesting. And that's why I was pretty passionate about that take, is just, I think, you know, it's, again, Bitcoin has, you know, its playbook, and Ethereum has its playbook. And I just think that the staking part is really, really something that is needed. And there's been some staking ETFs that have gone live, right, with Solana, especially Bitwise. And I just thought that
I just thought BlackRock might have jumped on it earlier with Bitwise launching its Solana one and advertising it really hard. I was just, man, where is this Ethereum staking from BlackRock? Because I just think it's a big stamp of approval after iBit has been so successful.
Yeah. No, spot on, man. And I mean, speaking of Ethereum related things, there's a pretty large project for the tokenization space, which is what we've been talking about, called Ondo. And they were in a battle with the SEC for, you know, what, over a year now, and it is officially coming to a close. Now, the crazy thing about this, they even talk about it in this post from Cryptos R Us. Shout out to George. We should try to get George on sometime. Now that I'm thinking about it. I know he's a big guy and he's got a lot going on. But
legend of the game.
Legend. But, you know, he was talking about this and he's saying, like, when this all happened, it was kind of like without any reason, according to Ondo. They're like, hey, there's no reason here. And I was doing digging on this as well. And it was kind of just the SEC coming in and being like, yeah, well, we want to see whether these tokenized assets are actually unregistered securities. And like they could be, and maybe they fall somewhere else. And maybe you're not labeling them right. So we're going to get into a lawsuit and we're going to probe you and we're going to come in and see. And it was just like, what is going on? And obviously, to no one's surprise, they come out now and there's nothing there, right? It's closed. Nothing went on. They were found of nothing, doing nothing wrong. And there's just so many of these. There were so many targeted attacks on the crypto market and on some of the biggest infrastructure, because when you look at Ondo, they are one of the biggest terms of infrastructure and like kind of creators of tokenization and of real world assets. So when they go after stable coins and they go after tokenization and they go after different forms of infrastructure, that's going to be one of the most damaging things to the crypto market. So this is a huge win. It's a huge win for tokenization. It's a huge win for DeFi. It's a huge win for crypto as a whole. Again, like we are trending in the right direction when we're seeing stuff like this happen. And I think that it's super obvious, more so than now, that crypto is kind of flipping and doing a 180. And they want to be bullish on this stuff for at least the next several years. And a lot of the actors who wanted to prevent this from happening, they're gone. They're out. And now the people who are in, they want it to succeed and they want it to thrive.
Yeah, speaking of thriving, I agree with everything you said. I was just getting some alerts on my phone. The markets are looking pretty tasty right now. Nice little bump for the crypto bros. And maybe that's because of all the bullish news that we're covering, because it doesn't just stop there, Brendan. PNC Bank partners with Coinbase to offer direct Bitcoin trading for clients. This is really interesting because you don't think of PNC as like an exchange, right? And I obviously custody banks are probably going to want to get into custody, just like JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, all the old, you know, traditional, you know, big boys on Wall Street. But I think PNC Bank is interesting because it's a different level of bank. You know, PNC Bank is kind of, I don't want to say it's a local, because obviously it's a huge kind of chain, like a national chain, but it is one of those banks that, you know, you can see in your neighborhood and you can go in and talk to the clerk and use the ATM. Whereas like, you know, JP Morgan and Morgan Stanley, that's not their level up, right? They're an investment type bank. So I thought this was really interesting. It's the first bank to market such an offering among the major US banks.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, 100%. And like the article says, they're the first bank to market such an offering among like all the major US banks. So again, this is a step in the right direction. When we say, what is the future going to look like it's obvious. It's right in front of our face, right? It's all unraveling. Don't overthink it. Yeah. Don't try to overplay it either. It's just like all the big asset managers, they're filing for new crypto ETFs. They're accepting crypto. They are literally going on air and saying, oh, we're so bullish on this. We have some cool clips that we'll show everyone and kind of continue to show you all. But just don't overthink it. It doesn't have to be as complicated as you maybe think that it needs to be.
Yeah, this is one of those pieces of news, and like most of the stuff that we talk about every week on this stuff is pieces of news that I really think, unless you're listening to the show or you're on crypto Twitter or you're really into the space, like you have no idea. Like if I go and talk to, you know, maybe some friends or my parents, like they have no idea all this stuff that's being done under the hood of this industry moving towards kind of bringing the financial markets on chain, which is what SEC Chair Paul Atkins said. You pulled a clip here that's going to have some audio, so we're going to play that. It's how long is it, Brendan? About, oh, it's long. It's about 3 minutes. So let's jump in and let Paul talk to us, but we'll probably cut it a little shorter. We'll jump around. But basically, kind of building off the point of like, hey, PNC Bank, Ethereum ETFs, you know, Bitmine, all that stuff. Like your average person doesn't know any of that, but that is evidence that's leading towards this. All U.S. markets will be on chain within 2 years, which is what Paul Atkins is talking about here. So let's take a listen.
Tokenization is the idea of using then smart contracts or you know, tokens on chain to be able to that represent, say, an underlying security. So then that tokenized security is a security and would be subject to SEC rules by law. But the idea is that it's, if it's on chain, on a blockchain, then there's much more transparency as to where it is. Right now, there's a bit of opacity as to, you know, who owns what and where the company usually doesn't even know where its who its shareholders are and where the shareholders reside, where the shares reside. So tokenization has the benefit of potentially having, instead of T+1 now trade date plus one for clearance and settlement, the prospect of maybe T0 now, depending on the instrument. And you know, we have to, you know, think about netting and all sorts of other things with respect to some instruments. But in principle, the idea of on-chain delivery versus payment and receipt versus payment, DVP, RVP on-chain, is a prospect of de-risking the markets, making them much more transparent and then sure as far as clearance and settlement, because it's always that the gap between clearance and settlement and then delivery and payment is the real introduces risk into the system.
Yeah, I mean, I know if I use one of my old brokerages and you make a trade, I mean, the money, you know, shows up in your account, but it's unsettled funds, and it could be unsettled funds for a day or two. And then you can trade your unsettled funds, but if you do, you can't be as nimble. So like if you wanted to, I just throwing out something, if you wanted to sell Amazon to go buy Uber, you can do that on that day, but then you can't sell those Uber shares for 2 days without a pretty big penalty, because it's unsettled shares. Again, just talking about moving, making markets faster. It's something that, you know, we've been talking about for years, is just the financial system, the banking system. It's archaic. You know, I know you have some real estate. I have some real estate. It's like the wire transfer process. You're transferring tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars, and you go to your bank and you give them the wire instructions, and then the money goes shoop out of your account. And then they're like, I'm like, okay, did it get there? They're like, we'll let you know in 2 days. I'm like, what do you mean you're going to let me know in 2 days? I just
2025.
Brendan, it's 2025. I just sent $100,000. What do you mean you're going to let me know in 2 days?
Yeah.
I just went through that process recently. It blew my mind. I'm like, I went through all this process, get the wiring done, and then like, I'm like, okay, it's out of my account. Can you confirm that you have receipt? And they're like, oh, we'll let you know in 2 days. What?
Yeah. Isn't it crazy how that works? It's like, it's 2025. You sent them like $100,000 or hundreds of thousands, and all this money's in limbo, and they're like, oh, it'll take a couple days. It's like, what? In what world does anything today take a couple days that isn't like physically being shipped? Like, what electronic should ever take that long? And it doesn't make sense. And that's why we're seeing this whole revolution in the first place, is because this needs to change. And I mean, listen, it's like you said as well. There's more transparency. There's more efficiency. There's a lot of problems that it solves, not to mention it can create better liquidity and even give people more access to the market, because it can be even more fractionalized. And at the same time, you have these things which could very well turn 24/7, which it already seems we're kind of moving in that direction in the first place. So If you're not excited, get excited because there's a lot more to come.
Yeah, and I mean, it was a great point, but let's tie a bow on it. Like, that's the SEC chair. Like, that's the guy making the decisions and building the guardrails. So, again, you know, in theory, he's going to be in that chair, you know, in that seat for the next couple of years, and there's a lot of, you know, regulation coming down the pipeline that people want for the guardrails for exactly what he's saying. So, like, if you can kind of piece the puzzle together, if you want to, you know, play detective and get out your magnifying glass, you know,
And he took, keep in mind, he's the guy who took Gary Gensler's job. He's the new Gary Gensler.
I know.
What
I
a
know.
180.
God, remember how much fun we used to have with the Gary Gensler days? I do kind of miss him. I think we said that on the show before.
I miss the memes.
Yeah,
I don't miss him.
yeah, we miss the memes. Like, one more time.
Well, I didn't know he was that unpopular. Let me say it again. On day one, I will fire Gary Gensler. Whoa.
Oh man, had to just for old time's sake. Too much fun.
Oh, the memes are too good.
Yeah, those are our favorite clip for a while. But let's tie a bow on the episode with rate cuts. It is Tuesday. You might be listening to this on Tuesday. You might be listening to this on Wednesday. But Wednesday, December 10th, is Fed rate cut day. Chairman Powell will announce the decision and have one of his famous press conferences. We've done this live, actually, the last couple times. I am sad to announce that we will not be able to do it live. We have some work we got to get done, and it's just obviously a busy end of the year, so I'm not going to be able to do it live. But I do promise, if it's something, we're going to tee up what we think is going to happen. If there is any crazy surprise, we will get a quick, you know, episode out to everybody. But according to Polymarket, there's a 94% chance that the Fed will cut. So that'll be our third cut of the year, I believe, right?
Yeah,
it'll be our third rate cut in 2025. And so, you know, I think we've kind of teed this up the last couple of times that he's been here. You know, Polymarket has led us the right way so far. Obviously, you know, anything could happen. But the press conference that Fed Chair Powell does and taking questions moves the market more than sometimes the decision. So that's going to be tomorrow. Will be really interesting to see. But Brendan, what are you looking out for?
You know what I'm looking out for? I'm getting a little bit of PTSD from last December when we were in a very similar situation, TiVo. And we got, it was like a brick hitting you in the face. We were in a very similar spot last December and things didn't go as planned. And for whatever reason on the last December's call, you know, at one point hikes started coming up in conversation. And so I'm getting a little bit of PTSD saying, hey, everything's looking a little too hunky-dory. We're getting three cuts all of a sudden now, you know, or we're getting our third cut. Everyone's saying it's guaranteed. They're saying it's priced in. I'm a little bit nervous. Again, I'm not trying to make anything happen here, but knock on wood, we get it. But again, last December, man, we got thrown for such a loop. Makes me a little bit nervous this time around because that hurt the market bad. At one point, you mentioned the idea of hiking and hawkishness and all these other things, and we're in a much different spot now, and I understand that. But cautiously optimistic going into this thing. You know, I was looking at, like, do I want to take some off the table here just until tomorrow happens? Because who knows what he's going to say? Even if we do cut, what is he going to say after that? And I think that's, you're right. Like, that's what really needs to be studied. I think tomorrow it looks as if we're going to almost certainly get a rate cut. I hope we do. But what's he going to say after that? And I think that is what is going to potentially rock the market.
Yeah.
It's depending on what words come out of his mouth. And then the other thing is that, as we look in the next year, I mean, obviously there's forecasted to be more rate cuts next year. And I saw Trump say that it is a requirement. Yeah, here we have it on the screen. He says it's a requirement for the next Fed chair to do an immediate rate cuts. So immediate rate cuts is a requirement for the next Fed chair, which again, if you're a fan of crypto, you like that. That's what you want to see. Could Jay Powell be looking at that and saying, well, if I know there's going to be a bunch more cuts, maybe I need to not cut. Like, maybe that's something that goes on in his head where he's saying, I know that the next Fed chair is going to go on a ton of rate cuts. I know he always says, oh, he's data dependent. But like, we know that that hasn't always been the case, right? Yeah. I mean, sometimes he's forward looking, sometimes he's backward looking, and it's, who knows?
Yeah, we had a tough time last year. I remember me and you, especially, I know I had some, some gambling type, some option trades going in the year. It was a great year. We had a great year. And so I was playing, I had a play I was on, and yeah, Powell did me dirty last year. So I agree with you. It's something that we need to be monitoring. We need to watch out for. And just to kind of build on your thought is I wonder if tomorrow it gets, you know, kind of the end of Powell's term is coming to a close. And we've talked about this before, is this getting to the point where it might get kind of a little political in a way for Powell just to kind of on his way out? And it seems like, you know, sadly, the Fed should not be this way, but it seems like the Fed has gotten more political, definitely in the last year, if not more, of just kind of picking sides, right? And that's not what the Fed should be doing. But for the betterment of, I guess, how he wants to be looked in the eyes of history / the future as well of what's his next career path and who's going to hire him to speak and do this and do that. Like, you're picking sides politically, it feels like. And so it is going to be a fascinating, I think there's going to be a cut. I think you have to cut just because of the committee. The Fed chair is the most powerful position on that committee. But, you know, I don't think you can veer too far off, I guess, unless the committee is truly split. Then I don't know. It's something to watch. I just think I think his press conference is where he gets, you know, kind of personal and says kind of more what's in his thoughts. And you know, he's a person, too. So it'll be interesting to see if the human element sneaks into it. But again, anything could happen. But just like a lot of the volatility that we've seen, again, I think you got to look through. If it goes up, great. If it goes down, you know, that stinks. But, you know, you got to be smart, right? You got to plan your trades and trade your plans just like Bryce has taught us. You know, do not get silly with leverage, especially if you don't know what you're doing. You know, that's where you got to educate it. If you're sitting in spot, you're going to be fine through a Fed decision. So not too stressed about that. But Brendan, breaking news, Bitcoin 93K. Let's end the show. Pull up the charts one more time if you can. Pull them up. Let's just click through. Let's go on a one day. Let's show people some of the bullish momentum before we sign off, because things are trending up. I see Coinbase up 3%, Bitmine up 5%. I see Ethereum up 5%, Solana up 5%, Pengu up 8%, Pudgy Penguin, unbelievable.
Jeez. It is a sea of green here on the watch list. Look at Zcash up another 10%. Zcash revival, question mark? But no, you're right. I mean, dude, things are skyrocketing. Bitcoin at 93,100. It goes back to our original point. Tivo, we're seeing cracks in the bearish structure.
Yes.
The bearish argument, the bearish armor itself, we're seeing cracks in it, which is what we want to see. We want to see the bears lose. I don't know about all of you. Actually, not all of us. There is one person in here on a pretty routine basis.
Uh-oh, inverted investing.
I don't think I see him in here today. Did you see him in here?
We haven't heard from him in like a year, legitimately. And then he commented when Bitcoin came down to 80K. I'm sure he had us saved on one of his tabs and made sure to, I don't know what, I guess it's a victory lap for him. I don't know. He's been wrong for about 2-3 years now. So
yeah,
but we love him, but we do love inverted investing.
We want him on our team.
We want him on the live. We want him on the live as well.
We want him on all of it. Come on the live, come to the Bulls. The Bulls want you. We've rebounded $13,000 since the lows. Join the bullish team. It's the dip. Buy the dip. The long-term trend is your friend. But man, we want all of you on our team. Jamie Dimon came on our team. You know, he capitulated. A lot of people have. So come join us. But man, I think that's it, Tivo.
Yeah, and we'll finish it off with who is on our team. I mean, honestly, we jumped on kind of last minute. We didn't promote this one. We'll be doing one Friday with Brian and Joe that we will promote. Hopefully the chat gets raucous, but it was a good one today. We had Debbie chime in. Grant was here. JD was here. Kevin from the UK across the pond, first live. He's a regular listener. And if you thought that was the only person from the UK. That's not the case because LJ was here. First time as well that he caught alive. Thank you guys for listening all the way across the pond. JD was here as well, along with many others. We really appreciate everybody joining in on the live on YouTube. We appreciate everybody listening to the audio as well. We hope you guys enjoyed the show. Again, fundamentally bullish. Price action specifically today looking bullish. The rate cuts are going to happen this week. We are going to recap that with you on Friday. Unless there's some crazy emergency, we'll hop back on and break it down for you guys. We really appreciate everybody listening and hope they have a great rest of your day. But that's it for now. So bye-bye, everybody. Have a good one.